where there is going to be a never-ending supply of people who are appropriate recipients for this Steve Lowenstein Award. The award is, of course, also in part for JOIN, and there are a number of staff and board members here today who work with me. It's been a highlight of my life to be connected to JOIN for a number of years and to have been able to take over at JOIN a couple of years ago. It's the vision for this organization, for what we do and how we do it, has always come from the people who are on the streets and trying to get back into housing. We point to having helped thousands of people end their homelessness over the years, but that achievement is first and foremost the achievement of every one of those individuals who took charge of putting their homelessness behind them. JOIN's contribution to that process has come largely through the efforts of our amazing staff. Today, it's 19 people, and regardless of their job description, they're essentially working every day tirelessly to support the efforts of individuals and families to rebuild their ties to this community. And of course, what JOIN does, the help that we've been able to provide people in achieving their hopes and their dreams, comes directly from the support that we get from hundreds of individuals, companies, foundations, agencies, nonprofit partners, and very importantly, the City of Portland. Without the support of those partners and the city, we could not have gone from having a single outreach worker who was housing a few dozen people a year to having a 10-person outreach and retention team that helped over 1,000 men, women, and children end their homelessness over just the past 2 years. So on behalf of everyone who was part of JOIN, thank you for this wonderful recognition. As some of you may know, we're in the process of creating a new, larger community center for homeless individuals and families. And we've set aside the money that is attached to this award to build out the planned library and meeting space, something that I hope Steve, as an author, would feel good about having the money spent on. I want to thank the JOIN board and staff who are here today, my family members who came, and my friends, and thank you, Council, and especially the Lowenstein Trust. Thanks.
Mr. Mayor, after any comments that people want to make, I hope that we can take a picture and ask the Trust board to come forward, the JOIN staff and the council, and stand with Mark and get some pictures. But
well, I just want to, I honestly didn't know if there was anyone on the planet that could take Rob, you know, fill Rob's shoes. And and you have, and you've done it with gusto and accomplishment, and I just admire you greatly, and I couldn't think of a better person to get this award. So congratulations.
I'd just like to add my accolades. Mark, you're a very deserving recipient of this award. And I just want to say it's been a pleasure to work with you in your many capacities over the years that I've been on this council. I think you're a very persuasive but diplomatic individual, very determined. But, you know, I know that we haven't always been on the same side of issues, but I've always found that we can have great substantive discussions about those and treat each other with respect. And so I really appreciate those qualities in you, and very deserving recipient of this award. Thanks.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you for all your service in our community and for our community. You mentioned, did you grow up in Portland?
I did, yes.
Which schools did you go to?
I went to Ainsworth and Lincoln.
Yeah. That's it. It's just a wonderful place to grow community leaders, and I thank you for all you've done.
And I, too, have enjoyed working. I mean, we actually haven't disagreed very much, so it's been a real pleasure.
It's been good for me that way.
Yeah. Yeah, we always do that.
So I really very much appreciate, and I've learned a lot more about you today listening to this. So it's really an honor to be able to support you.
Thanks. So, shall we get a picture? All right. Come on, coming up.
Yeah, JOIN staff who are here and board.
Don't be shy.
Come on, you're here. I know you
are. No, I will come on.
How are you? How are you?
Wow, how are you? Wow. Thank you very much.
The whole audience was here for this.
Right. Yeah, right.
We know how to turn people out.
Right.
Hey, Jamal.
Yes, you do.
Huddle up there.
All right, everybody, huddle up. Smile. Big smile.
Lots of pictures. Come on. This is not my day job.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Thank you. Nice.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Red.
Yes.
Oh, and you've got it.
I try.
You're kidding. That's great. There's no council action. I don't think there's council action on this.
We have to vote on that.
Court introduced.
Yeah, I don't think it needs any counsel.
Unless there's a motion.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Fish. Those were really excellent introductory comments as well. I think that gets us to calendar item 190. Is that what you have, Carla?
Yeah.
Could you please read the title for calendar item 190?
190. Pay claim of Caitlin Johnson.
Do we have staff? Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, council members. I'm David Landrum from the city attorney's office. I'm a deputy city attorney. I'm here on items 190 and 191. City is...
Can we, just for the rules, can you read a title for item 191?
Mm-hmm. Pay claim of Brianna Wyatt.
Thank you.
City has negotiated settlements with Ms. Johnson and Ms. Wyatt over two lawsuits, separate lawsuits that were consolidated for trial in Multnomah Circuit Court. I believe the amounts are a total of $52,500 for Ms. Johnson, which includes $32,500 in proceeds, settlement proceeds to Ms. Johnson, and $20,000 in attorney's fees. And for Ms. Wyatt, the amount is $53,005.97 and includes the same amount of settlement proceeds to Ms. Wyatt, $32,500. And her attorney's fees were slightly higher, $20,505.97.
Why are we doing this?
Because it will save the city money, and it is the right thing to do for our town.
Well, could you be a little more specific on that?
Yes, Your Honor. Yeah, Commissioner, I can. This case involved some inappropriate activity by a Portland police officer who was subsequently pled guilty to two counts of... I can't think of what you call it, public misconduct, official misconduct, that's the name of the charge. And initially, the Police Bureau investigated these allegations by these plaintiffs when they reported them through the Internal Affairs Division, then that was transferred to the Detectives Division. It was investigated as a crime. It was referred to the District Attorney's Office for prosecution, and the Police Bureau assisted in that prosecution. The officer... as part of his plea deal, he resigned from Police Bureau. He resigned his police commission from DPSST. City had a legal defense in this case, but the chances were good that irrespective of the trial outcome, the other side would have taken the case to the Court of Appeals and potentially the Supreme Court because there is our legal defense was based on an issue that is tied up in the Tort Claims Act. And so even to prevail in this case would have cost considerably more than what it's costing us to settle it. And the specific facts in this case were unhappy, let's say.
Is this a settlement that's been recommended by a mediator?
Well, we did go to a mediation. The mediator actually recommended something slightly higher. I was able to negotiate something lower than his recommendation.
Okay. And if the city had taken these cases forward and had lost, was the city potentially at risk of both a damage award as well as paying the attorney fees for the two plaintiffs?
Yes, there were three claims for each of the plaintiffs that were state common law claims for which attorney's fees would not have attached, but there was one statutory claim for each of the plaintiffs where attorney's fees were recoverable. And, excuse me, at least at the trial stage, yes, the city was at risk for paying a potential jury award higher than what we were paying today.
And in light of the misconduct, which I mean, I learned a little bit more just reading the newspaper, but I understand, I guess, the gist of what occurred. Do you know whether the police bureau has taken any steps to make sure that this is just the isolated efforts, a conduct of one officer, and that will not occur again?
Well, I don't know that they've taken any steps that are specifically related to this particular case. I know that the police bureau is making efforts to tighten its hiring standards and its ability to evaluate candidates all the time. And in fact, in this particular case, I've been in touch with Chief Sizer about that particular issue. So the short answer to your question is, my understanding is yes, but I can't give you any specific example.
Any other discussion or questions from council on these two council items? Thank you, sir. Is anyone signed up?
We have one person, Dan Handelman.
Good morning, Mr. Handelman. Welcome to City Council Chambers. We just need your first and last name, and you'll have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. I'm Dan Handelman. I'm with the Portland Cop Watch. Our address is P.O. Box 42456 in Portland. I just want to testify about these settlements in the context of the racial profiling discussion that we've been having over the last few years. I look forward to having the discussion about the plan that just came out around that. I'm glad that Commissioner Fish asked about what's the Bureau going to do to prevent this kind of thing from happening, because at Portland Cop Watch, we have seen this kind of sexual misconduct happen repeatedly in Portland, and like racism is prejudice plus power, sexism is also prejudice plus power, and we don't know that that discussion is happening at the Bureau. We actually haven't heard a lot of discussion about power dynamics happening, and I kept trying to bring that up in the Racial Profiling Committee and kind of got lost in the shuffle. There have been several officers who have left their jobs after facing criminal charges for sexual misconduct over the last few years, not to mention the money that this is being paid out that in these tough financial times for this misconduct and other kinds. Of course, today we're talking about Officer John Wood, who asked women he'd pulled over to show them their underwear to avoid being cited for DUI offenses, allegedly. For those who don't remember, Officer Wood, actually, when he was reserve officer, shot and killed a robbery suspect in 2000. And we are wondering sometimes when people in the force have shot somebody, if they have enough counseling so that they don't go on to commit other offenses like what Officer Wood did by abusing his power with women. We're hoping that that's something else that will be looked into as well. We also know, as was mentioned, that Officer Wood had his police certification revoked. We also, the other officers in recent years who have committed such offenses are Officer Matthew Conkey, who allegedly harassed a woman in a transient camp and shined flashlights down women's pants. Officer Jason Falk, who had sex while on duty with a woman suffering from autism. Officer David Howe, who was arrested by picking up a prostitute while off duty in a sting operation, and he had been previously disciplined for failure to radio his location was driving a prostitute around town and had also been known for harassing exotic dancers. And, of course, there was also many years ago, well, not that long ago, it was the CERT scandal where the hazing operations and when people joined the Special Emergency Response Team were asked to go through sexual hazing rituals, and a woman blew the whistle, and she ended up getting disciplined along with the man because she participated in them instead of being honored as a whistleblower. So there's clearly some issues around sexism and sex and gender politics that need to be discussed in the Bureau as well as the racial training that's going on now, and we hope that as Chief Sizer has expanded the sex crimes unit, which has got poor ratings from Auditor Blackmer, that she'll also look into training about sex and abuse of power.
Any comments or questions for Mr. Handelman?
Well, comment. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. I have read Chief Sizer's recommendations on the racial profiling issue and noted that she was using the word racial profiling in deference to the wishes of the committee that worked so hard on that, and noting that the Bureau policy is bias-based police, titled bias-based policing. So this is really helpful that you came today and certainly highlighted for me as the commissioner in charge of the Office of Human Relations and the Human Rights Commission that now that this community policing committee is housed there, that we need to continue our ongoing efforts at looking at all kinds of community police relations.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Dan. All right, unless there's someone else in the room that did not sign up that would like to testify on these matters, or unless there's additional council discussion, Carla, will you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
I'm going to vote aye. I think the city owes an apology to Ms. Johnson and Ms. Wyatt. I'm pleased that Officer Wood is no longer with the Bureau, and I know that Police Commissioner Saltzman shares the feeling that we all have about this kind of official misconduct, and I'm hoping that these kinds of pay claims don't appear on our agenda again in the future. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, as Police Commissioner, I do apologize to Ms. Johnson and Ms. Wyatt for what they suffered by Officer Wood. This was inappropriate, and this settlement, as our attorney said, is the right thing to do. And, well, I just want to also note that, you know, our police organization, our police officers are fine, outstanding, hardworking people. You know, like any organization, there's always people that defy that label that I've just given them. But as has been commented on, through more training, we hope that these situations do not occur again. And as, again, my apologies to Ms. Johnson and Ms. Wyatt. Aye.
Leonard?
As distressing as the facts of this case are, what is equally distressing is how the actions of a person can cast a pall, as Commissioner Saltzman just referenced, to the literally hundreds of outstanding men and women in the police bureau. And with all due respect to Commissioner Saltzman, this is not a training issue. This is an aberration of a person who behaved outside the conduct and the high standards of the Portland Police Bureau. I've had the privilege of, notwithstanding my prior profession and interacting with police officers, but really at a much more deep level this past summer, meeting dozens, if not hundreds, of officers. And unfortunately, we don't ever have a resolution come before council where we sit and talk about the person who works, donates their time off at Meals on Wheels, the officers that do that, that work with distressed kids, that do all of the outstanding things that I observed. And you have a person like this come forward and raise questions about the integrity of the entire force. It is, I know, distressing to the officers, and I want them to know that this council puts in context those kinds of behaviors, and there's no question that we have really in the front lines that the best men and women that could be serving the force, and I know they are as distressed as anybody else is about the facts of this case. So I'm sorry that this happened. I appreciated Commissioner Saltzman's words apologizing on behalf of the Bureau. That was a very kind and appropriate thing to do, and I am equally distressed and apologize for these incidents. Aye.
Adams.
And I, too, want to thank Commissioner Saltzman for his words prior to his vote. Aye. Let's do, just to be safe, 193.
We'll do the roll on 191.
Oh. The other play. Got it. 191. Sorry. Got too much ink on my agenda.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Passed. Could you please read the title for item 192?
Yes. Authorize contract with Quest Diagnostics to provide confidential worksite blood screening to benefit eligible employees and provide aggregate reporting to the city through November 30, 2013.
Unless there's objection from council, I'd like to pull this item and return it to my office. So, Dunn, could you please read the title for council item 193?
193, amend contract with S. Brooks and Associates to provide temporary aquatic staff for Bureau of Parks and Recreation for an additional five-year period.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council.
Good morning, Mayor Adams and members of City Council. Christine Moody with the Bureau of Purchases. And before you is an ordinance recommending amending contract number 40828 with S. Brooks and Associates for an additional five-year period for temporary aquatic staff for Portland Parks and Recreation. Based on past history, we anticipate the annual contract amount will be an estimated $1.5 million. And through our strategic sourcing program, the city was able to directly renegotiate our contract with Brooks. And as a result, they agreed to reduce their overhead charges by 7% for a total five-year savings of approximately $120,000. S. Brooks & Associates is a locally based temporary services firm, is also an Oregon State minority-owned business. And they have a strong recruiting strategy in the local community that helps develop a diverse applicant pool for our staffing needs.
Good morning. I'm Lisa Turpel with Portland Parks and Recreation. I thought it might be important to share a little bit of information about how Parks and Recreation uses our Brooks employees. We use them for a variety of part-time needs. Everything from lifeguard, water, swim instructor, rec leaders that help us do a variety of unskilled and lower skilled kinds of work at our community centers. They operate teen gym times, roller rink attendance, that sort of thing. We've used, as you know, Parks and Recreation has a long history of partnerships. And we have a variety of tiers of kinds of employees that we employ, everything from our permanent full-time civil service employees to our seasonal employees to our volunteer cadre of over 7,000. And our and we also have a very, very small sector of our employees that we use a temporary services contract for. And as Christine has mentioned, that has been Brooks staffing. Due to the, we very aggressively keep limits on the number of Brooks employees that we use. Our contract allows us to be somewhere in the 60 to 120 of our 2,000 employees during the course of a year. Right now, currently, we have 57 Brooks employees on that are helping in our do our work. The variety of these individuals that we employ through Brooks is when we need a seasonal kind of work at a variety of locations. Most of these staff work at a variety of locations, maybe 2 hours over at this community center, another 4 hours elsewhere, and on and on. And they need, or we want them to stay as a part of our workforce more than 1,200 hours a year, which is the limit of our seasonal employees. The average Brooks employee today works somewhere between 24 and 36 hours a week. We have a very small number that work 40 hours a week. Because this is an extension of an existing contract, we're hoping that that will happen, and we do not anticipate any changes whatsoever, although we have, as Christine pointed out, negotiated a lower markup with the contractor. Brooks Staffing has been an excellent collaborator with us. They've partnered very well. As you can imagine, when you have an employee situation where the employer actually is another contractor and not the city of Portland, it's very important that we work closely together on personnel needs, training, getting people ready for their work. It is a certified minority business here in town. They provide us with a large pool of diverse candidates. We make hiring decisions collaboratively. They come with the kinds of qualifications that we need, and then we provide the technical training that they would require for our workplace. The one thing that I would also like to mention is that working with a contractor, the Brooks does provide a very, very small fringe package for these employees, which, of course, the city cannot offer. A one-week vacation package, some 3 days of vacation, paid vacation, and so forth.
Lisa, thank you. I also just want to note that we'll be hiring 600 young people to serve as lifeguards at all of our facilities this summer. So it's one of our biggest youth employment programs. So thanks very much.
But those are hired directly through Portland Parks, right? The young people?
Yes.
Correct.
So I have a question about the fringe benefit. Do they get health insurance from Brooks?
They get a small, limited health package, yes. 1 week of paid vacation and three holidays, I believe. Three paid holidays.
Didn't we just establish that like last year?
No, that's for Portland Parks employees, the temporary employees. I'm wondering about the comparable health insurance of these temporary employees that are working 24 to 36 hours.
Well, maybe if you're interested in that, Margaret Brooks is here. She could comment on that perhaps for us. Margaret?
I think that the question is about the applicability of our council ordinance on seasonal temporary workers.
So this is a different.
My understanding, though, is that our temporary workers get the benefit that Laborers 483 negotiated. I'm questioning whether the ones hired.
No, so am I. Yeah,
yes.
I agree.
I'm sorry.
Hi, Margaret.
Hi, how are you?
Good. So our question is, we last year passed an ordinance that after negotiations with local 483, that our seasonal workers, part-time seasonal workers, would get health care and other benefits. Does that ordinance apply to these workers?
No, it does not. And that ordinance applied to our seasonal maintenance workers. Most of our, I think all of our Brooks employees work on the recreation side of the house. They're not seasonal maintenance workers.
What kind of health insurance do they get?
Basically, what we provide, and we pay 50% of it, is a health insurance because of employees coming and going a lot in the temporary service. It's very hard to get medical insurance companies to even get any coverage. So what we've allowed to do is we have a coverage that costs the employee 29 cents an hour. We pay 29 cents an hour. And what they get is kind of indemnification. If they go to a doctor, they get $35 off the doctor visit, 10% off prescriptions, life insurance for them and their families. And depending on how many hours they work, the coverage gets greater. And I thought I brought that with me today, and I can get it to you. But it basically is, you get, if you work up to 15 hours, you get so much coverage, up to 35. And if you're working 40, you get more coverage. And there's some hospital coverage in that. It is minimal, but it is better than, and they do take advantage of it, the employees that we have working. Not all of them do, but a good portion of them do, and I know they've found it very useful to have it.
So I think that's great, and you're the sort of the sourcing, our sourcing contractor on this, and that sounds great. I do think, though, I wasn't aware that what we did last year excluded, so this is back to sort of the park side, I wasn't aware that that excluded recreational temporary seasonal workers, and I would like parks to look at the options of extending for the maintenance workers benefits that we achieved last year for the recreational workers.
Are these workers represented?
No.
So the one caution I want to throw out, and this is going to come up again when we're talking about our sports venues, is I've been thinking through this whole issue as it's come up, because there are some that are advocating our sports venues, we establish a family living wage. I think we need to be very cautious about, as I'm thinking through the policy implications, about us taking the place of what otherwise would be a bargaining unit. For instance, in the park temporary employees, those changes came via a collective bargaining agreement and an elected representative. I'm finding myself increasingly uncomfortable us making decisions outside of that kind of a format. So that, for instance, if your workers wanted to organize and then bargain that as the other temporary workers did, I'm very supportive of that. But I just think we need to be very cautious, because once you start going down this path, we have a whole lot of people in this situation, including people who clean our offices, that we don't address in our family wage policy that we've adopted at PGE Park. That creates a lot of questions for me, is how do we pick some and not others? So the easier answer for me is we should allow workers to organize that want to organize and then come to us and, as you do in any collective bargaining environment, agree or not to a set of wages, hours, and working conditions. But I'm increasingly uncomfortable us just interceding kind of ad hoc basis.
You know, as the new parks commissioner who is inheriting a system that this council set up, I think those points are well taken. The use of contract employees does alter the ground rules in terms of, as you know, in terms of organizing. Commissioner Fritz's point, or the sort of gist of her point about the benefits, I would actually like to raise the benefits of all the people who provide services for parks. And if the council wants to go that way, I'm actually thinking of putting in a supplemental winter bump request so we can do that, because I've also been charged with...
Oh, you mean you're going to charge us money to do that?
I've also been charged with finding maintaining services and finding a 5% cut. But I'll say this. The points that you're raising are points that resonate with me. I am, after all, a former labor lawyer. I think, in general, it's more helpful to me as the Parks Commissioner to hear some of these comments from some of my colleagues before council, because then I can address them. But I appreciate that any time they're raised, we can address them. I, too, have a concern or two. This contract, is this contract time sensitive in terms of, do we have to execute it?
By the end of March, yes.
By the end of March? So what I'm going to suggest, because... there's a few points that have been raised where I don't have a clear answer. And I think, by the way, your presentation was excellent. I'm going to propose we set this over a week, because I want to do a little more homework on it and then be able to answer the questions that have been raised. And I think Commissioner Leonard's point about the context, because this issue is being raised in other settings, and I do think we have to think about that. I know that this is something that has been discussed with Buzz. But anyway, I think it's useful to take a week or to make sure we get it right. So if council's okay, if Christine and Lisa, if you're okay, let's set this over a week. Pardon me?
It's actually coming under the Office of Management.
Well, he's
Finance.
Deferred to me on it, so I appreciate that. Cool. I would recommend we set it over a week.
I wonder if I could make one more observation, because I work with four people who very much are what you would characterize as pro-union people. And it has been my experience that that where you have, in the for an example, the private sector, employers who are savvy enough to look at a competitor who pays wages, hours, and benefits according to a collective bargaining agreement to adopt those standards for him or herself in order to avoid having a union. The workers at that point don't recognize the importance of having a union because they get the same benefits. So the council taking these kind of unilateral actions outside of a collective bargaining agreement really serves to undermine the effort to organize people, because the workers then don't recognize the need in paying union dues and having the normal processes that you go through to get a collective bargaining agreement. So I'm, as I said, this is just an issue I've been thinking through quite a bit.
And if I may, Commissioner Leonard, on that, again, I completely agree with the spirit of what you just said. I think the challenge is, in a bureau like Parks, which has seasonal part-time people, like for example, teenagers who provide services for 3 months in the summer as lifeguards. I guess there's nothing which would prevent them from coming together, forming a union, and having, you know, those rights for the 3 months. But I think we probably pay something just above the minimum wage, and we have a benefit package. I'm not sure that degrades the overall collective bargaining scheme, but I also think it's worth asking, you know, how are every category of people who provide services being treated?
And you may be right, it may not, but I'm immersed in this discussion with some on the PGE part thing, and I'm increasingly getting to the point where I believe that we're actually enabling bad behavior by paying a living wage.
I get some of those emails as well. So I would suggest we set this over a week or two, and then we can answer those questions and bring it back for discussion.
Okay. And these things take time, so I'm totally open to moving forward with what you've already proposed for the summer.
That's not covered by this. The youth and the summer employment program for teens would not be covered by this. This is...
I like the fact that you're willing to go back and take a look at it. What I'm saying is sometimes these things take time. Do what you can in the time that you have, so that at the same time we're also covering what we need to cover for the upcoming summer. We absolutely did negotiate, you're right, with Local 49 on the maintenance workers. It took longer than it should have, but it did take some time to get done. So I think the conversation has been good. And unless there's council objection, we will set over.
We set over for 2 weeks.
Council item 193. Is there anyone, though, before we do that showed up in the room to testify on this matter?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Not seeing anyone interested in testifying. The matter is set over for 2 weeks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You bet. Carla, could you please read the title for council calendar item 194?
Yes. Authorize intergovernmental agreement with the City of Forest Grove and Tri-County Metropolitan Transportation District of Oregon to provide transit police services.
I'd just like to introduce Commander Jarmer of the Transit Division to tell us about this ordinance.
Welcome to City Council.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Commissioners. The IGA that I'm asking you to approve today is the vehicle by which Forest Grove will become the 12th member of the Transit Police Division. The Transit Police Division is currently made up of about 50 sworn police officers whose focus is safety and security on the transit system, which is the buses, the MAX, and including the New West train down in Tualatin, and also the properties of TriMet. We have been given some extra positions to fill to bolster our ranks, and I made a foray out into the up to now non-participating agencies in the Transportation Service District to see if they would be interested in contributing an officer. And Forest Grove is one. I should have a couple more for you here in the near future. But I would ask that this be approved to bring this Forest Grove police officer, whoever it is, we are in the selection process next week to select an officer from the people who have expressed interest in Forest Grove at the police department there, and bring that person over as soon as we can to join our ranks. That, in a nutshell, is Transit Police Division.
Thank you. Any conversation from council?
I have one question, Commander, and it's not directly related to this, but I had lunch with a friend the other day who takes the MAX to Gresham home every night. And when there was a lot of publicity about some of the challenges on the line, she was in the middle of that. She had some personal stories about people getting on and behaving in a disruptive way or a threatening way. Do you have any sense of whether there has been some, demonstrable improvement in the safety for riders on the MAX?
I feel that, and I think that's probably what you'd expect me to say anyway. It would be anecdotal at best, but I think crime in general is on a downward trend. Hopefully that will continue. I'm not so sure with the state of the economy. But the way I would gauge whether or not we see an improvement in criminal behavior or not criminal behavior, but disruptive behavior that just makes the ride really uncomfortable, is through a couple different sources. I now wear two pagers so that I can get all of the calls that are coming in, and the paging system has become, thankfully, a little bit quieter. We have a record through TriMet that keeps a track of all the customer service inquiries that come in and all the ones that are related to behavior on Macs or buses that are either criminal or just disruptive. Those are starting to slow down. Our activity level that we report, and I think each one of your offices gets the report monthly, is pretty steady, but that's because we actually have a fair amount of self-initiated activity which takes care of this. But just as a one final note, one of the things that we find pretty effective, not only the visibility, but to add to that, is the invisibility thing that we do occasionally where we have a demonstrable problem. We'll have plainclothes officers on the vehicles to address either a concern that's stated overtly, or we just go where we know where the action is going to be. That's the long version of the short answer of yes. I think it's getting better, especially out in Gresham, or out east, because we have a dedicated crew to that area only, and we hope to increase the number.
I'm pleased to hear about the undercover folks, because that's a good way of sort of testing. And she takes the Macs between 5:30 and 7.
Mm-hmm.
And she has not, and she's done it for many, many years. She has not been the victim of a crime per se, but what is disconcerting to her is when groups of people come in and engage in very loud, boisterous, antisocial behavior, vulgarities, and what she perceives to be threatening behavior, that she feels as an older woman powerless to engage, and she can try to change her seat or move to another car, but that's what she's reported was the most offensive.
Our goal is to make the ride comfortable, really. And there's a certain amount of limitation that we have about freedom of speech and what people can actually say, but we do have some control over the volume level of that and how uncomfortable it is. We also have some control over dogs and other animals that are sometimes on the train that can cause disruption, loud phone talking, those kinds of things. It's kind of we have to take a pretty measured approach the way we approach those issues, but our goal is to make the ride comfortable where you can just get on the train, mind your own business, drive home comfortably, and not be hassled by these groups.
Thank you. Yeah.
I was just curious, what's the typical tenure of an officer on the transit team from other jurisdictions?
What I would like to do is ask the agencies to participate for 3 years with a possibility of 1 year extension. So 4 years is the max. However, we've had a few people rotate out after two.
That's typically one individual for that 3 year or 4 year?
Okay. Yes. Great. Hopefully by July 1st, I'll be at 58 officers.
Okay. Thank you for your outreach and getting a new person without additional cost to us. Appreciate that.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Thank you.
I was just sharing with Vince before council the absolute professionalism of his officers in making sure all of us drive within the speed limits of Portland.
Our pleasure, Commissioner.
Thanks for the infusion of resources. All right, any other conversation on Council Item 194 from council? Thank you. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify on Council Calendar Item 194? Hearing none, this is an emergency. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I want to thank Commander Jarmer for the outstanding job he's doing with our transit division, so thank you very much. Aye.
Leonard?
And I agree. Aye.
Adams?
Thanks again. Aye. Item number 194 is approved. Carla, could you please call read the title for Council Calendar Item 195?
Authorize the solicitation of proposals for design and professional support services to staff, services to city staff charged with designing the city's new emergency coordination center.
Commissioner Leonard.
There were questions raised last week. We think we've addressed those. We have BDS Director Paul Scarlett and Water Bureau Director David Schaff available for questions.
Good morning. I'm David Schaff. I'm the director of the Water Bureau. Carla is distributing a packet for you. It includes a cover memo from me about this project, an outline of the BDS staff that we will be utilizing for the project from Paul, as well as a memo from James Van Dyke, Chief Deputy City Attorney, regarding errors and omissions and liability concerns that were raised last week. We also have a little bit of a numbers estimate on what it would cost to build the building as a one-story building, build it with the shell, as we discussed last week, and what might be the costs if we were to add that shell 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 years from now. So the questions that were posed last week were, what are the current estimates for the one-story building? And they range between $15.5 and $17 million. That is for a one-story building that is built with the idea that a second story could be added on later. The estimate for a second-floor shell-only building was approximately $22 million. Building it out was estimated around $24 to $25 million. Using a construction escalator of about 7.5% annually, after 5 years, the cost to build the second floor would be approximately $9.3 million. That's based on our estimates and our experience with construction escalation. We were asked questions about design and review, conflicts of interest. My memo covers that a little bit, but basically each member's work is going to be reviewed or signed off by either the section manager or another member of the team to ensure that proper checks and balances are in place. In addition, the plan review functions are separate from the inspection functions in BDS, housed in different divisions in the Bureau, and they're under different managers. We don't anticipate that there would be any issue at all with the BDS employees doing the work and then having that work reviewed by other BDS employees and, of course, inspected by yet another group of employees. From the standpoint of savings, we were asked the question about savings, and we're really trying to accomplish two goals with this project. One is to build a building, or to design a building, a state-of-the-art ECC for the city. The second is to take advantage of the in-house expertise that we have of BDS employees that are otherwise potentially going to be lost to the city of Portland because of what's going on in the economy. Mm-hmm. If we were doing this 2 years ago, we probably wouldn't be doing this with BDS. In a couple of years, I hope that BDS will be so busy that they won't be able to do this for us. But in the meantime, we have people who have expertise, and we can tap into that expertise and keep those people working for the city of Portland rather than lose them and potentially have to try and find replacements for them a couple years down the road. I was asked about checks and balances on the potential costs. We've estimated that the design of this building will be between $1.2 and $1.9 million. So right now we don't know. We're hoping it'll come in lower. We're hoping that it'll come in substantially lower than what we were estimating 6 months to a year ago, partly because of the change in the economy. There are more firms out there, and hopefully they're hungry, and they'll be wanting to be very competitive in their bids. But we don't have unlimited resources. And one thing that I can tell you is our chief engineer, Mike, has called in sick for the first time in 15 years. That's why he's not sitting here with me. But Mike runs a project review board on a monthly basis. He meets with all of his principal engineers and the project coordinators, and they pick apart the projects that they're doing. We've gone from an organization that was completing just 50% of its capital plan 3.5 years ago to 98% last year. So we are moving and we are rocking and rolling and getting things done. As a general rule, cost changes in bureau projects are typically due to changes in conditions. So, for instance, we just discovered that we have some contaminated soils in our Sandy River Crossing project. That's a change in condition that was unanticipated. Otherwise, we are on track and within our budget. On the errors and omissions, we probably should have been more articulate last week, but we really weren't prepared for it. This is what we do on a typical basis. At least in the Water Bureau, and I think to a certain degree in BES, our engineers do a lot of the design work. But we will also work with consultants and other contractors. And we negotiate the scope of that, and our contractors, people that contract with us to do work for us, as we are proposing here, are required to provide omissions and liability insurance. And I actually have with me the excerpt of the omissions or of the insurance documents that we require of our contractors on a regular PTE contract, and it's 7 pages long. Now, what Jim Van Dyke says is that, as a general rule, we, the City of Portland, when our own people do the work, we are responsible for our work. So if we make a mistake, we don't turn around and sue ourselves, and we don't turn around and sue our employees. But we do require our PTE contractors to have insurance, and they are covered under omissions and errors and omissions provisions, and that is part of the scope of work that is worked out. So what Jim says is basically what we should have said last week, which is this is the sort of thing we do on a fairly regular basis. We do design work and we work with consultants, and it's real clear where we draw the line. If we're stamping the documents, if we're doing the work, then we're responsible. If it's done by the contractor, then they are responsible for their errors and omissions. From the standpoint of scope, we're anticipating the equivalent of 4, maybe 4.5 FTEs out of these 7 people. And we might even use something more than those 7 people if there's a particular skill set that we need, that we identify, that we haven't outlined in these 7 people that we have in front of you. If you need them, I have the resumes for all 7 of those people, but I didn't think you would really want them. So what I say is 4, 4.5 FTEs, you know, we might use 1/10 of one of these people over the course of a year. We're talking about 4, 4.5 people for about a year, and we're spreading that work among, right now, these 7 identified people. We're intending to create a scope of work in the RFP that's broad enough to give us some flexibility to get the project done, to find the skills that we need, but narrow enough that we're real clear what the contractor's going to do, what we're going to do. And we have a project manager, David Gray, who will be riding herd on this to make sure that everything comes together as we expect. And that's David's job. That is what a project manager does for the Water Bureau. And he's done a number of projects for us recently over the last several years, and I have no question that we're going to be able to make sure that everything comes in as we expect it to within the budget we identify.
Paul, did you have something to add?
Very little. Good morning. Paul Scarlett, Director for Bureau of Development Services, Mayor and Commissioner. I'm pleased to partner with the Water Bureau and to provide the design assistance in the development of the ECC facility. Very confident that the list of employees you have from BDS that will be part of this process have extensive years of experience and qualifications and the right certification. And we know we have a process that includes the proper checks and balances and actually mimics what we typically do with projects or work coming from the outside, in that the person reviewing the plan will not, or designing the plan will not review their own work. We will contact with the applicant, in this case the Water Bureau, if there are corrections that needs to be made in the form of a check sheet. And those processes will play out as they similarly would with outside projects. We're very confident that we have the folks that will contribute positively and constructively to the project.
Questions from the council to our staff?
First of all, I want to say thank you for this information. It's very responsive, I think, to the issues that were raised by several of us last week about liability, about governors on the cost of the design, you know, what the governors of the cost. So this will take about a year, you said?
We expect the design process will take about a year, yes. A year to 18 months, I believe we're projecting.
And I did review the resumes of the applicant, or I'm sorry, of the design team. And
yes, design team members.
Are extremely qualified. And, you know, my final concern was about the checks and balances and proprietary aspects of the Bureau of Development Services doing design work, which also they're charged with reviewing and permitting design work. I think you've answered those questions, and certainly we're in some unique circumstances here where this proposal makes sense to me now. Mm-hmm. I do want to just pursue some other aspects that I didn't raise last week, and I should have. One is that this facility will, per city policy, be designed to a LEED Gold standard.
That is the intent, yes.
Mm-hmm. And then we also, and it may be a part of your achieving LEED Gold, but we do have a 2005 Green Building Resolution that requires city-owned facilities to have an eco-roof and at least 70% of the roof, covering at least 70% of the roof, and then also high-resistance Energy Star-rated roof material mm-hmm. on remaining roof areas where practical. Are you cognizant of that?
I'm not, but I know that my project manager, David Gray, is.
Yes. I did want to say, yes, in reviewing the credentials of the team, yes. There's a lot of green building experience there. So mm-hmm.
Yes, there is.
I just
want
to make sure that we're going for LEED Gold and that we're also, we'll look at that resolution about eco-roofs.
I know simply be from reviewing it that we are going for LEED Gold. I wasn't familiar with the other, but the Water Bureau does know what it's doing on this stuff. So.
Right. And we have, I've had conversations with both Commissioner Leonard and with Chair Wheeler, and our work with our federal stimulus, interjurisdictional federal stimulus coordinating committee, going to be making an application to the federal government for the resources to do the phase two. And we'll know over the next 45 days, which I think is within the parameter of allowing you to design phases, how realistic that is to get the additional money so that we can co-locate the county with the city, which in the last top off showed a really strong need for.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. I participated in that over the week, and I would absolutely agree with that. This is a facility that the city desperately needs.
If I could just say, I thought it was a superb presentation, as usual, from both of you.
Thank you.
As you may know, I'm looking for a new director of the Housing Bureau. Because
okay.
of your professionalism.
No.
David, you should leave now.
Because of your professionalism, I know that you would never publicly comment on the challenges of working for any particular commissioner in charge.
I would.
If asked, he will.
He's nearer to retirement than I am.
For personal and professional reasons, thinking you would change the scenery, I'd be delighted to have that conversation with you offline. And thanks for your responsiveness on these.
You're welcome.
By the way, one other thing to Paul.
Yes.
You coach which high school track team?
St. Mary's High School. I'm in my 10th year of coaching, started Monday.
So Paul and I had lunch a while ago, and he regaled me with his history as a track star and his coaching now. Mm-hmm. And my daughter, maybe if you channeled something, because my daughter has signed up for her high school track team.
Oh, we should talk.
So I think, well, we can talk up until game day. You're on your own, and you know we'll be keeping things on a strictly professional basis.
I hope that goes.
Thank you both.
You're welcome,
Commissioner Fritz.
So I too thank Commissioner Leonard and you all for being so responsive to my questions over the last week. I'm still questioning the additional cost of the shell of the second floor. Mm-hmm. I wasn't asking about the inflation mm-hmm. costs. I was asking how much extra does it cost to take off the roofing and now perhaps the eco roof. And add the second story in a second phase, even if it's 2 weeks later, when the construction site is set down, all of the materials have been recycled. How much extra does it cost to do it?
That difference of $6.5 million if it was 2 weeks later. I mean, it's the difference between building a $15.5 million building today and 2 weeks later saying, okay, we've got the extra $6.5 million, let's put that second floor on there.
How much of that $6.5 million is taking off the roof and adding
We actually have dealt with this, and Tom Lipton and the Bureau of Environmental Services, I know, would be happy to provide technical help where we can do eco roofs that are pretty easily removable and reinstallable.
Okay.
But Commissioner, that really is the answer. It is the difference is between the one-story building of $15.5 million and the two-story building. With just the shell, it's $22 million. So
you factored in, though, Commissioner Fritz's question, you factored in the cost of stripping the roof.
Right. That is okay. Our operations building out at Interstate was built that way.
So
it is
it
intended
cost?
To be the increased in height.
How much would it cost to build the second story shell in the same phase?
$6.5 million.
And exactly the same amount to take off the roof.
Yeah, if you do it in 2 weeks, but if you do it next year, it's going to cost more. And the year after that,
in 2 weeks, it would cost exactly the same amount.
That is our estimate based on